Morning. We welcome you to the April calendar of oral arguments. We're especially delighted to welcome Pewaukee High School students. Would they please stand? You are here, aren't you? No, Pewaukee's not here? Do you know? Well, that's
okay.
Those brave ones among you.
Thank you very much for coming. Well, I'll try another school. How about Manitowoc Lincoln High School? Okay, thank you. We're delighted that you're here, too. You may be seated. The students are here with a program sponsored by the State Bar of Wisconsin in this court. Students from high schools around the state are invited to join us for an oral argument. If the invitation is accepted, materials about the case are sent to these students. They may engage in a variety of activities relating to the case. The students come to the court, listen to oral argument, and we'll meet with a justice who has been assigned for the day to meet with students. They will discuss the procedures of the court in accepting and deciding cases. There is no discussion of the substantive issues involved in the case. All of you are welcome to join with the students after the second oral argument in talking with a justice. If any of you wish to have a summary of the case we are about to hear, if you'd raise your hand, the marshal will give you a summary. It's easier to understand and listen to the oral arguments if there you know something about the facts and the law. Marshal, thank you. While that's being done, let me introduce the court to you all. Seated to my immediate right is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. Justice Bradley is the justice with whom the students and others will meet at noon. To Justice Bradley's right is Justice David Prosser, and to his right, Justice Annette Ziegler. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my immediate left is Justice Patrick Brooks. To his left, Justice Patience Robinsack, and on the far left, Justice Michael Gableman. With those introductions made, I'm going to call the first case today, 07AP2886, the Saddle Ridge Corporation versus the Board of Review for Town of Pacific. Arguing on behalf of the Board of Review for the Town of Pacific is Amy B. Trupke. Counsel, you may proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Amy Trupke. Seated with me at counsel table is one of my partners, Robert Horowitz. We represent the Board of Review for the Town of Pacific. This case is about how and to whom property in a condominium should be assessed. At issue are 41 declared but unbuilt condominium units in the Town of Pacific. The declared but unbuilt units were properly assessed to Saddle Ridge, the condominium developer, for two reasons. First, four separate sections of Chapter 703 demonstrate that the assessor properly assessed the value of the declared but unbuilt units to Saddle Ridge as the legal owner of the property. The first section is 703.02, subsection 15, which states that a unit is part of a condominium intended for any type of independent use. The statute goes on to list examples of what qualifies as a unit. One example is a cubicle of air located at one or more levels of space. A building is not required. Declared but unbuilt condominium units meet the statutory definition of unit. The second section is 703.04, which establishes that a unit, together with its undivided interest in the common elements, constitutes real property for all purposes. The third section is 703.21, which establishes that a unit, together with its interest in the common elements, is deemed to be a parcel and subject to separate assessment and taxation. The fourth section is 703.07, which establishes that a unit is created as soon as the condominium declaration and plat are recorded. Together, these four statutes demonstrate that a declared but unbuilt unit is a unit, a unit constitutes real property, each unit is separately assessable, and each unit is born when the condominium declaration and plat are recorded. A building is not required in order to have a unit. These four statutes establish that Saddle Ridge is the legal owner of the property.
Counselor, was there ever a written appraisal report prepared by the town's assessor?
No, Your Honor, there was not. The assessor valued the declared but unbuilt units using the comparable sales approach without an appraisal.
Okay, so he didn't write anything, so because I looked in the record, I was hoping to find it, and I didn't find it. And so the only thing that would be in the record in regard to how he came up with $32,000 after having valued it at $5,000 the year before is just whatever conversation there was at the Board of Review hearing, or where would I look for?
Your Honor, in the record, it does describe the comparable sales that the assessor used to value the property. The assessor's testimony, I believe, starts at page 38 of the record, where he talks about the property and the specific sales that he used are in the transcript.
Fine. Thanks a lot.
I have a question along those lines, too. As I read this, Saddle Ridge is not objecting whether it's 32, what, 29, or 4,500. Their position is zero.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So should you prevail, do they have a right to challenge the $32,000 as not being a correct assessment? I mean, that for that particular year, I mean, next year they might have a right to challenge it.
Your Honor, our position would be that they don't have the right at this point to challenge that the $32,000, if they made that argument today, they certainly can. However, that they haven't argued that in the briefing.
I didn't see that. It's zero.
Correct.
Period. Okay, and that the realist, the way they're in the assessment where it says property or land, and I've forgotten what it is, the assessor put zero.
You're correct, Your Honor. The assessor put 0 acres of land. Correct.
Right. Okay. All right. So, what I don't understand is, you've got an unbuilt unit, right? So what you have, I visualize raw land. Is that right?
Well, Your Honor, if it weren't under the condominium ownership, that would probably be correct. Under a beneficial ownership test, you would see it as land, but given that it's under the condominium declaration or form of ownership, a condominium consists of units and common elements, and the property has to be one or the other.
Well, what's the town's position? Is it the town's position that what you are going to assess is the value of having control over an unbuilt unit, plus that unbuilt unit's percent of the common elements?
Yes, Your Honor.
Have I stated that correctly?
Yes, Your Honor. We believe that each declared but unbuilt unit is a unit separately assessable with its corresponding interest in the common elements. And that's under the legal ownership analysis. The second reason why the assessment should be sustained is that Saddle Ridge is the beneficial owner of the property. Saddle Ridge owns all of the valuable rights associated with property ownership, including the right to build, the right to sell, and the right to retain the sale proceeds.
Well, where's the legal title?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Where's the legal title?
The legal title, we believe, rests with Saddle Ridge because parcels are units, and the tax bill has been set to Saddle Ridge.
They have the right to build them. They have the right to sell them.
Yes, Your Honor.
Do they have the right to sell them unbuilt?
Your Honor, they did claim that in the Board of Review hearing that they don't have the power to sell the actual declared but unbuilt units until they build, but that it is that's a decision that they made when drafting the condominium declaration.
If Saddle Ridge, I mean, obviously you've got some land and you got some rights there, right? Saddle Ridge doesn't pay the property tax. Who does?
Well, Your Honor, one of two things could happen. If this court finds that the property is not taxable, then the burden would it would not be taxable and the burden would shift to the other taxpayers in the jurisdiction. If the court finds that it is property that can be taxed but not to Saddle Ridge, the burden would shift to the owners of the built units.
Well, suppose you file a condo, the appropriate condo papers, but you don't start to build because you can't get a loan at the present time. And what you got is all unbuilt units. What would the town of Pacific do then?
Well, Your Honor, the town of Pacific, in accordance with the condominium declaration and the unit numbers, they would assess all of the declared but unbuilt units to the condominium developer Saddle Ridge. Under the Court of Appeals decision, we believe the town couldn't assess anything because there were no built units. And we believe that that is one of the reasons why the Court of Appeals decision leads to uncertainty and should be reversed.
Is that why Judge Dykeman called it the Holy Grail?
Yes, Your Honor, that's why.
Could I ask a question to clarify this? There are three different condominiums?
Yes, Your Honor.
Are there three different condominium declarations?
The record only contains an excerpt of each condominium declaration. The record contains the definition in the declaration of unit, common element, and how, but it does not contain the whole declaration, but the parts that have been submitted are similar.
Okay. Now let's just take Saddle Ridge Estates condominium. Mm-hmm. When that declaration was filed, was the number of units contained right in the declaration then and there?
Yes, the number of units that were declared were contained in the original declaration that was filed. When Saddle Ridge expanded and had added additional area, the transcript indicates, and in accordance with the law, that was amended or a new declaration was filed stating that the new number of the declared units.
I'm sorry, say that once again, please.
When the condominium declaration and plat were recorded, it contained the number of units, and both built and unbuilt. And in the declaration, each unbuilt unit had a unit. And then what the county then gave each declared but unbuilt unit and each unit a tax parcel number. And that is what the assessor assessed, each single unit number corresponding with the tax parcel number.
Let me ask this. Could a developer, could a declarant file a declaration without list? Well, let's say we had 100 acres, but the declaration only had three units, mm-hmm. and everything else was common elements. Is that possible?
Yes, Your Honor, that is possible. The condominium declaration must contain a general description of each unit. So it is possible that the original declaration could contain three units. However, it would also depend on whether the whole 100 acres was platted or whether those just three units were specified in the condominium declaration. If there are only three unit numbers given and three tax parcel numbers given, then three units would be what was assessed.
What, suppose it was platted?
If it's platted, that means that the unit is born. Each unit comes into existence when the condominium declaration and plat are recorded. And that's supported by two different statutes. First, 703.07 subsection 1 provides that a condominium is created by recording a condominium declaration and plat. So once that declaration and plat are recorded, the condominium, including the units, exist. whether or not construction has begun. The second section that supports that is section 703.09, subsection 1, subsection C, which requires that the declaration contain a general description of each unit, including its perimeters, location, and any other data sufficient to describe it with reasonable certainty. Together, these statutes confirm that as soon as the declaration and plat are recorded, the units exist whether or not construction has begun. A building is not required in order to have a unit that is subject to taxation.
If the declarant filed the declaration on 100 acres, let's say 3 units, and didn't plat it otherwise, how difficult would it be to plat it later?
It would be difficult, Your Honor, because if the 100 acres is the condominium and 3 units have been platted, in order to expand, it has to have the written consent of all of the unit owners.
Because you've made them part of the condo.
I'm sorry, Your
Honor? Because you've made them part of the condo.
Yes, because the 100 acres is already part of the condominium. Now, if there were 100 acres and only 3 acres have been platted and there are 3 units, then you wouldn't require the consent of those 3 unit owners to plat the rest of the 97 acres. That would just be done by recording another condominium declaration and plat, because those 97 acres had not been platted and recorded yet.
And they're not in a condo, so you tax them like you tax any other vacant land.
Yes, Your Honor, exactly.
Well, what I'm trying to explore is this. Your argument seems to be that from the moment the declaration was filed, all the units were declared, and those units should be taxed at least to the beneficial owner and probably to the legal owner.
Yes.
And that isn't the people who own built-up condominium units. It's the declarant.
I'm sorry, I misspoke.
The declarant.
Yes. Yes, the declarant is the legal and the beneficial owner.
But if you filed a declaration, 100 acres, only 3 units, wouldn't the implication of your argument be that the 3 units would have to pay for everything?
If that whole section was in the condominium, and also the percentage of common interest is supposed to be permanent in nature. Therefore, if it is 100 acres and you have 3 unit owners, that means while they will pay for the common elements of the land, they can enjoy those 100 acres, and that cannot be built on, or they can only have the 3 units on them without their written consent.
So they control the 3 owners control the development.
Yes, because their percentage in that common elements is permanent in nature, and there are only a few circumstances in which their percentage ownership can vary. What the Court of Appeals held is that the percentage varies depending on the number of built units, and we disagree with that. We believe that every unit, declared unit, whether it's built or unbuilt, has a percentage interest in the common elements, and that's fixed in nature, and that percentage does not vary based on the number of buildings. And we believe that that is contrary to the statutes, to have that number being changeable like that.
Counsel, I'm interested in the question of why you're making an argument about beneficial ownership. The Court of Appeals, majority at least, said that that was irrelevant. You've already said that Saddle Ridge is the legal owner. What difference does it make if they're the beneficial owner?
Well, Your Honor, we agree that Saddle Ridge is the legal owner, and why beneficial ownership is important. Prior to the Court of Appeals decision, it seemed that beneficial ownership controlled and that legal ownership was irrelevant. And that was based on the Wisconsin University Building Corporation case in Gebhardt versus City of West Allis. What the Court of Appeals decision has done is it's created a special exception to the beneficial ownership test for condominiums. and it really hasn't articulated a reason why. And beneficial ownership test is consistent with that, with assessing the property that benefits from the land. However, if this court found that legal ownership is controlling, it doesn't need to decide the beneficial ownership test, but it should at least provide some guidance to assessors in whether the beneficial ownership test applies only in exemption cases or to regular assessment cases or regular assessment cases except for condominiums. Right now, there's a lot of confusion for the assessors in how they're to assess the property.
Now, do you know whether the other unit owners, through the condo association or otherwise, paid taxes on the full assessed value of all the common elements?
Your Honor, they pay the full assessed value on the common elements except for what the Court of Appeals ruled as the common elements, the 41 declared but unbuilt units. The existing unit owners have not been taxed on those 41 declared but unbuilt units. That value has always been assessed to Saddle Ridge.
So you don't have double taxation here should you prevail, is that right?
Correct, Your Honor. The only entity that's ever been taxed for those 41 tax parcel numbers and the corresponding value has been Saddle Ridge.
And that tax assessment covers the unit plus the unit's tenant and common ownership of the common elements.
Exactly, yes.
Got it.
Counsel's a follow-up to Justice Crooks's question. Not only does the majority not embrace the common, or rather the beneficial ownership test, but the dissent also eschews it.
Yes, correct, Your Honor.
So you've got both sides in the Court of Appeals, and I thought engaging in a vigorous debate, and you come to this court and say, oh, they're both wrong. I understand your argument is if you find legal ownership, if you rest on legal ownership, you don't have to get to beneficial ownership, but we'd like you to get to beneficial ownership, and beneficial ownership does play a part in this analysis. When both parties, both the majority and the dissent have specifically said that beneficial ownership plays no part in this analysis. I'm quoting from paragraph 44 of the dissent. Both the majority and I agree that beneficial ownership plays no part in analyzing the real issue in this case. So why do you want to jump in where angels fear to tread?
Well, Your Honor, right as a result of the Court of Appeals decision, there is a lot of uncertainty. What is unclear is that so far to this date, the beneficial ownership test has only been applied in property tax exemption cases, not assessment cases. However, the central issue in let me back up a little bit. The central issue in exemption cases is identifying the owner of the property, if there's any dispute about it. If there is a dispute about ownership in exemption cases, the analysis is necessary to determine whether the property should be assessed to an entity subject to property tax or exempt from property tax. But the central issue in this case is the same, identifying the entity that should be assessed, Saddle Ridge or the owners of the built units.
What about judicial restraint? By that I mean not getting to issues not necessary to resolution of the case. Why, just because it's a lingering question out there, why should we get to the issue? Won't an answer without addressing that issue fully resolve this case?
Your Honor, it will fully resolve this case. You are correct about that. However, the beneficial ownership test, in the town's opinion, needs to be clarified for assessors going forward. But you are certainly right that it's not necessary to decide that case here, but it's the lingering doubt about how it applies and whether it applies just in exemption cases, in assessment cases, or all other assessment cases except for condominiums. And that is something that assessors need to know in order to do their jobs.
Seems to be fair to
everyone.
Seems to me you're using the beneficial ownership as a belt and suspender. That is, if you lose on the belt, you got this. and that you and the assessors don't really care if the court says legal ownership of these unbuilt units is in the developer, and they're taxable. There's no reason to go further unless we say no. Then you say, well, you got another arrow.
Right, Your Honor. There are two separate justifications for why the assessment was done properly in this case and why the assessment should be affirmed. They are two different arguments, and that's true.
Judge Dykeman says that that the parties just got off on the wrong foot, both at the board and in the circuit court and in the Court of Appeals. Can you explain that more fully to me?
Yes, Your Honor. The record contains both there were no lawyers involved in the Board of Review proceedings, so legal ownership and beneficial ownership in layman's terms were both discussed. In the circuit court, Saddle Ridge framed the issue about the vacant land and how they didn't own the land and double taxation. So right from the get-go, from the circuit court level, the terminology used has been the vacant land. The town's position has always been, regardless of the label, that the property has value, the property is taxable, and the property should be taxed to Saddle Ridge. Whether it's called, well, the terminology, whether it qualifies as a unit under the statutes is important, but the layman term is not as important.
So you think the error started by viewing this as vacant land rather than the opportunity to develop built, that is to build units?
That it was in part to blame for the uncertainty and also the case law that talked about how beneficial ownership was controlling and that the legal ownership was irrelevant. That together, yes, Your Honor.
If I could go back to my hypothetical about the 100 acres and the 3 units. If I owned one of the 3 units and was being asked to pay the property taxes or a third of the property taxes on that 100 acres that I couldn't control, really, in terms of development because that had been reserved to the declarant, I might want to say, I think the declarant has the beneficial ownership of this property.
Your Honor, the declarant would have the beneficial ownership because they can control when a unit is built. But if there is 100 acres and there are 3 units and that's all there's going to be in this whole 100 acres has been platted, then when you buy that unit, whether it's been built or not, you know that there's only 3 units and you know that you're getting undivided interest in the common elements, meaning that 100 acres of land. So you do know the number of units when you're going into that. What the Court of Appeals said is that only the built units get the percentage of interest in the common elements rather than the unbuilt
units. Well, you know, you're assuming that there's really careful examination of all the documents. The plan is we're going to have 100 units here. We're going to have 150 units. We only listed 3 now, but the plan is much bigger than that.
If the plan is much bigger than that and all 100 acres are subject to the condominium, then those 3 unit owners, it requires their consent to have any other unit. So they do have some control, but that's assuming the whole 100
and
acres.
I give my consent because I don't want to pay those taxes.
If you're more concerned about taxes versus having your undivided interest in that much land, that's correct.
But you need your other 2 unit owners, and you would then become the developers.
To decide whether your 100 acres gets developed.
Yeah, or you want to sell off 95 of those acres. 3 of you could do it if you joined up.
Theoretically.
All I am saying is this. You win this case today, if you do. That doesn't mean developers were very, very creative people. are not going to try to find ways to minimize or eliminate the property taxes.
On themselves.
On themselves. So if you slam the door on beneficial ownership as a concept, we'll think of something new.
It's certainly possible, but this resolving this case would at least tell them that the attempts they made in this case to try to avoid property taxes are shut down. So it does shut down some of the ways to make property tax more fair, in the town's opinion.
Thank you, Council. You will have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you.
Ms. Bankers, representing Saddle Ridge Corporation.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Josephine Bankers. I'm from Quarles and Brady, representing Saddle Ridge. It's important to remember that this case is not about whether or not there's something taxed. It's about who's taxed. In this case, the individual unit owners were already taxed on this vacant land. And that is what, in our opinion, we think the town of Pacific was trying to tax again.
Well, the town of Pacific, in response to my question, said it wasn't taxed before.
If you look at the lower court briefs, however, it's all about taxing the land. This land is vacant land. It's unbuilt upon. What they are trying to tax is essentially unbuilt pieces of air floating above the land at this point. There is some confusion in the record and in the briefs below talking about taxing the vacant land. That land was already taxed to the unit owners as part of the common elements. And there's no dispute.
All of the land. All of the land under the unbuilt units too.
There's no dispute that under the condominium declarations that land is part of the common element of the condominium, and that all of the unit owners, until it is built for sure, enjoy the use of that land.
Councillor, if that's part of the common element, when the builder wants to build on one of these unbuilt units, does he have to get the permission of the people that already have built units to take away some of their common element?
No, this is something that is already set up in the condominium declaration, which really does control here. The developer has already reserved the right to build on this land, and the land actually remains common once the additional buildings are built. It's different than what some people set up as a land condominium, which is a little bit more like having a subdivision where you have lots that are limited common elements so that you can have sort of your own reserved piece of land.
You know, if you're saying that the unit owners are already taxed on this vacant land, when you stick a building on it, it's a lot less vacant. I mean, what may fall around the outsides of the building may continue to be common elements, but certainly not the part that the building's sitting on, correct?
Yes, you're correct.
Okay, and so my concern is, if I agree with your argument, it seems to me that the folks that are there that you say have been paying taxes on this and do already own it as part of the common elements are kind of getting a short shrift, aren't they?
Well, it depends on the way you look at it and what the individual unit owners would want. In this case, not only would they have less yard to play on, but they would also, per the condominium declaration and the way it's set up, there would be another unit there. There would be a built unit. Mm-hmm. And so that person who would own that built unit would share in the expenses, the upkeep, the property taxes on the entire common element. So that part would probably go down.
Okay, now I thought in the past these units, at least the year before, were taxed at $5,000 each, and that doesn't sound to me like it was taxed to the other folks as a common element. Did I read that exhibit wrong?
No, you're right. They were taxed at $5,000 each, and there were objections raised. Obviously, when they went up by $27,000, the stakes went up, so
we ended up in court. Yeah.
Correct.
Okay, but I'm just trying to be sure I understand the facts, because otherwise it's easy to goof up the law. And what I thought you were telling me is that the people who already owned the built units were paying taxes on this area that's denominated as units but unbuilt, but yet the record shows Saddle Ridge was paying $5,000 per unit on those same units, correct?
It's a little bit confusing. The unit owners are taxed on their unit plus an undivided ownership interest in the common elements.
I understand that. But what I'm trying to separate it out is if I wanted to find in the record what part of what they paid was attributable to these 41 units, mm-hmm. where would I find that? I can find what Saddle Ridge paid. There's an exhibit sure. on that. But I haven't seen anything that shows what the other folks paid.
Okay. Well, I think it's a little bit confusing because the unit owners didn't pay for the units, which are, at this point, pieces of air. Mm-hmm. They paid their pro rata share of the underlying land. And that sort of brings us to the definition of unit, and the definition, which is very important, I think, in the condominium statute, to look at the definition of property.
But before we do that, there's something, I think it's in the condo agreement, that each unit owns one, that's the numerator representing that unit, and then there's a denominator. Mm-hmm. What does that denominator represent?
The denominator is the number of units that are splitting the one. The one is the entire...
I understand that, but I want to know the exact number. Is that number... the denominator, all the built units?
That's my understanding.
Or is it all the units in the condo? Because my understanding is that in each of these three associations, there are vacant units, and that 41 is the totality of all the vacant units. So I want to know, this is really the same kind of question that Justice Prosser has been asking you, although asking the opposition counsel. I think that number in the denominator is the total number of units that the condo agreement, the condo papers, have as potentially built. So if that has 50 units, but only 40 are now built, each unit, I think, pays 1/50th, or has a 1/50th interest in the common elements, and that, but there may be 10 that are vacant. Now, what do you think of that?
So there would be 40 built units?
40 built units, 10 unbuilt, and the each of the 40 built owns 1/50th. Because you know there are 50 units. That's what the plan is. So you own 1/50th. Sounds right to me. Now, I don't know. I only own a little house.
I'm not sure I'm following the hypothetical.
Look, if each unit owns 1/50th of the common elements, that unit's going to be taxed on the value of 1/50th. That leaves 10/50ths that are not being assessed for the common elements. That's the city is short, the town, I'm sorry, is short. Now, if they're paying 1/40th of the common elements in the hypothetical, then everything is being taxed, but then there's a double tax if you tax the town too. I mean, this is to my mind simple mathematics, but I just don't know what's been happening and what you view as the appropriate way of doing it.
Well, we view under the appropriate way of doing it is to follow the condominium declaration, which defines a unit as a built unit. And as the units get built, then those built units start to share in the pro rata of the expenses and the common elements.
So you're saying it's, in my example, 40. You divide it 1/40th.
There's a formula in the condominium declaration.
That's what I'm asking. What's the formula mean?
The formula provides for an initial numerator and denominator, and then as there's an expansion, the formula provides that the pro rata share would change.
What does the expansion mean? Does that mean adding additional units to this agreement, or does it mean building?
It means adding the potential for additional units, and then as those units are built, there are additional
units. So if you sell only one of the 50 units, do they pay the tax on everything?
No, I don't think that's the case.
What do they pay the tax? How do you assess them?
Are you talking about in the very beginning of this condominium?
Mm-hmm. One unit's built, one unit sold. There are 50 in the plan. Now it's time to assess. So do we assess that one unit on the basis that they own all of the common elements?
Your Honor, I'm not quite sure. I'd have to take another look at that declaration.
Thank you.
Counsel, can I ask a question? In the declaration, it attempts to define unconstructed parcels as common elements, not units, right?
Right.
But if I understand this correctly, the units were plotted and the declaration was filed indicating there'd be 41 potential sites or units, right? Then your position is that because the language in the declaration defines those units as common elements, the existing unit owners have to pay the taxes on all of the units.
I think it's a little bit different. Our position is not that it defines the units as common elements. It defines the vacant unbuilt land as common element until someone decides to put a building on it, at which point a unit materializes.
Okay. If you didn't have the language in the declaration declaring that unconstructed condominium parcels are common elements, who would pay the taxes on the unconstructed condominium parcels?
If you didn't have that language, it would depend on what you had, I guess, in its place in the condominium declaration.
If the exact same thing was filed, 41 potential sites, 41 potential units, if you will, and you didn't have this kind of cost shifting or definition of common elements, whatever that language is that's unique to this declaration, who would pay the taxes? The exact same things are in there, the exact same language, except you don't have these parcels, unconstructed parcels, deemed to be common elements. Who would pay?
Well, I think that's sort of the distinction, is that they're not deemed to be common elements. I think under your hypothetical, the land would still meet the definition of common elements, at least under these condominium declarations.
So it would still be
vacant land.
You fundamentally disagree with opposing counsel then, that it depends how you file the declaration and the platted land. It makes no difference in your mind if the 100 acres under Justice Prosser's example is set out to have 100 different units, or if the 100 acres is set out to be common property for 3 units. In your mind, taxation issues are identical under those scenarios, regardless of the language in the declaration.
I think that's right. I think actually what you do is you look at the language in the specific declaration. For example, in Justice Prosser's example, there could be a condominium set up, and the condo laws allow for flexibility in how you set up condominiums. There could be a condominium, perhaps 3 homesteads want to share 100 acres to raise horses on them and have this pasture land. Or it could be set up where there is a plan, and that's really what we're talking about here with these unbuilt parcels, is these unbuilt pieces of air. It's just a plan and a reservation of rights to maybe put more units there in the future.
If I'm buying a property thinking that I'm going to be able to have my horses on the other 100 acres, I'm buying a different piece of property than if I'm buying a piece of property that I think I might have another 99 neighbors.
Right, and that would all be set forth in the specific condominium declaration governing. But at any, in either scenario, you would have the information up front to know whether you're one of these first buyers coming in, to know, and it's all a matter of contract and how the condominium declaration is set up. And in this case, the condominium declaration is set up so that a unit doesn't become a unit until a building is built. And I think this also...
Right, but the owner has no say on that versus the one where I'm one of three owners, I want to have my horses on the other, whatever it is, you know, the other acreage. I'm buying a different thing when I'm buying into that versus when I'm buying into, hey, at any given moment, you could decide to construct 99 condos on this parcel. And you see those as taxable the same way, regardless of what you declare from the beginning.
Until something is built under this condominium declaration, it depends on how you set up the additional 99. Is it a land condominium? What does the specific condominium declaration say? And I think it's hard to come up with a hypothetical because the condominium statutes really do allow for this flexibility, and you look to the condominium declaration to figure out what is the unit in this case. I think it's important to keep in mind the definition of property in Chapter 703, which defines property as unimproved land, land together with improvements on it, or improvements without the underlying land. The units that were taxed to Saddle Ridge here are not yet units, and they're not yet property because they're not yet improvements. If you look at the Chapter 703 and see the word property in there, the word property then follows throughout in the statutes, 703.04, where it uses the term real property. And then you look further. So you need to keep in mind, I think, the definition of property and also read that in construction with the condominium declaration. And all we have here is 41 pieces of air that the town of Pacific would like to assess at $32,000 a piece.
Counselor, it's been at least implied that you're giving up on your other opportunities under certiorari review, for example, except that the board didn't proceed according to law. Are you saying that we shouldn't examine whether the board's activity was arbitrary, oppressive, or unreasonable, or whether there was evidence that the board could not make the determination that it made? There was not adequate evidence for that? Are you giving up on those tests?
No, I don't think so. I think the primary issue is the legal issue of whether or not the units are, these pieces of air are taxable at all. Secondary to that, there was evidence and there was argument all the way down to the Board of Review's hearing that talked about the fact that the comparables used were entirely different. They were a completely different animal because they were a land condominium. And really, the assessor did not look at evidence to support his assessment, certainly not a $27,000 increase from one year to the next.
Okay, so you're really not giving up on the other avenues. You want us to consider them all?
No.
Did you brief that?
Thank you.
It was more briefed at the Court of Appeals level.
I don't see anything in your briefs challenging the $32,000 per se, should you lose.
There wasn't
separate. You're here on a zero versus $32,000.
There is some argument in the lower court briefs. There wasn't. Saddle Ridge didn't put it forth an alternative number or have a separate assessment, but there was argument that the board's action was done.
Did you argue it here at all in these briefs? I didn't see it, but maybe I missed it.
I don't think it's here.
Counsel, you've referred to the taxed items here as pieces of air. You did that in response to questions from both Justice Siegler and Justice Rogelson. And in his dissent, as we all know, Judge Dykeman pointed out the statute that says a unit is created upon the declaration and plat being recorded. Do you agree or disagree with that observation?
I disagree, especially in this case. The statute that has been quoted as establishing condominiums, 703.07, reads as follows: a condominium may only be created by recording condominium instruments with the register of deeds of the county where the property is located. I don't see that as saying a condominium unit magically absolutely materializes upon the filing. What that says is if you want to create a condominium, you have to file something with the register of deeds. However, at that point, what you have filed is your plan. Until you build something, the vacant land, let's say it was assessed agricultural, is still vacant land. So what the dissent called the Holy Grail of taxation, where all you have to do to avoid property taxes is declare a condominium, is not right. And that follows with defining a unit as being something that's already built, because once something is built, then the condominium materializes.
Well, I don't think he said that the Holy Grail was, well, all you have to do is declare a condominium. I think he was referring to the specific declaration in this instance.
Okay,
that the way the declaration was put together, it gives the label or classification of common element up until the point that the developer chooses to put more condominiums on it.
And I don't think there's any evidence in the record that this vacant land was never taxed. That's the distinction, is the land was taxed as land, and it always has been all along. It's taxed to the individual unit owners as part of the common elements once, several years ago, the units started to be built.
What happens to the taxation of these units? They're planned, 1 through 48 are shown on the documents. Nothing is built. Who pays taxes?
The unit owners.
There are no unit owners. There are no units.
There are already people who own other units other than these 41 units. Those are the individuals who have been paying the taxes on this land as part of the common elements of the entire condominium.
I'm taking you back.
Okay.
Nothing is built on anything. It's just a condo is declared. Papers are filed. No dirt is turned over. Who pays the taxes on this land?
At that point, all you have is a plan for a condominium, so Sandal Ridge would continue to pay property taxes on the land as the legal owner until something's built.
Okay, one unit is built, and that unit pays taxes on everything?
It's done per the condominium declaration.
So if that's a spec house, Sandal Ridge pays for all the units.
That would be my understanding.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that one.
That would be my understanding.
What is your understanding?
If it was a spec house, then Saddle Ridge would pay, because it would be still be.
No, I bought it. I'm going to own 100 acres now. I'm going to have an interest in 100 acres now. I'm willing to pay the taxes on it.
I believe that it was set up in the original condominium declaration that there were more than one unit at the beginning when things were started.
Okay.
To be
sold. Let's get back to Justice Cross's 100 acres. It's platted only with three condos, right? Can the developer build on the 97 acres that are not built on? Without the permission of the three condo owners?
Not if it hasn't reserved that right in the condominium declaration.
If it has
again,
reserved,
I think it goes back to the specific condominium declaration.
If it has reserved that right, then who will pay the taxes on the vacant 97?
If it's defined as common elements and included in the common elements, then the three
even though
unit
the
owners.
Even though the developer has the right to take it away as common elements and build on it?
Yes. And it wouldn't.
What do you think controls here, the condo agreement or the tax statutes?
Both. I think the tax statutes here, and we specifically have, you know, a specific statutory scheme as to condominiums.
What if there's a conflict?
In general, the specific statute trumps the general.
The specific tax statute trumps the...
A specific statute would tax the general. And in the condominium statutes, there is a specific definition of property, and something doesn't become property until you have either land, an improvement on the land, or an improvement without the land. Here, all we have is pieces of air which are not yet improvements. We have a potential plan for future improvement.
Counsel, in the Court of Appeals, Judge Sykes says this, Dykeman says this. For taxation purposes, the threshold question is not who owns the common elements, which is what we've been discussing. Rather, the question is what
are the taxable parcels. I'm reading from paragraph 37 of his dissent. And he cites to 3021 of the statutes. And, of course, that says that every unit and its percentage of undivided interest in the common element shall be deemed to be a parcel and shall be subject to separate assessments and taxation. So his analysis doesn't focus on who owns the common element. His focus is on, is this a unit? Under the definitions in the statute, a unit is a parcel. Under 703.21.1, a parcel, a unit is a parcel, but that's taxable. Is that where the departure really is in the analysis, that your focus is on who owns the common element, and his question is really what are taxable parcels?
I think that's right. I think the question is whether or not these unbuilt pieces of air are separate taxable parcels under the condominium statutes. If you look at the definition of unit in the statute, at the very end it uses the phrase in a building. If you look at 703.21, the end of that section, sub 1, it says neither the building, the property, nor any of the common elements shall be deemed to be a parcel separate from the unit. That again supports the notion that you have to have something more than thin air. You have to have at least a start of a building for there to be a unit to materialize. This is also underscored by the definition of property in the statute, as well as the reference to real property in 703.04, which is the status of the units. The status is, prior to building something, all you have, at least under this condominium declaration, which is not a land condominium, where things could be set up differently, all you have is a piece of air. And that doesn't become a parcel, in our view, until you build.
So it's a unit, of course. A piece of air is a unit, isn't it?
I don't believe it meets the statutory definition of unit under a correct interpretation of that unit. And I would cite to the ABKA case, ABKA Limited Partnership versus DNR, where this court said that the definition of unit is tied to the definition of property in the statute, which is unimproved land, land with improvements, or improvements without the land. And in here, in this case, there are no improvements yet for these 41 parcels. No, shovel has not hit the dirt yet.
Counselor, the amicus for the realtors thought that section 70.32, which talks about how real estate is valued, was relevant here, partially because of its view of how real property should be designed. Do you think 70.32 has any value to our analysis in this case?
I think the condominium statutes need to be read with reference to 70.32, but if you do look at the condominium statutes, which are a very specific statutory scheme for this very specific type of land ownership, you see that you don't have a separate parcel here until a unit is built. Once you have a building, whether it be, you know, an apartment-style condo or a home-style condo, or as this court recognized in the ABA case, you could have a grain silo as a condo. Once you have that separate something other than air, you know, then you have a parcel that can be taxed as a piece of real estate.
You're saying that parcels of air are not real property or just not units?
I believe parcels of air are not real property under the condominium statute. I think that is correct.
Are they taxable?
No, not in our view.
Yeah, but it says here in defining 70.32, it says, and this is underlined in this brief, define 70.32 for purposes of tax assessments, and I'm reading from page 14 of the realtor's amicus brief. For purposes of tax assessments, real property includes not only the land, not only buildings and improvements and all fixtures, and the KICA languages, and rights and privileges appertaining thereto, which they want us to believe means the right to build and sell.
And I don't think it's the case, however, though, in real estate law that you separate out every right and separately tax that right to the land as a piece of real estate. For example, in real estate, there's easements. What you're taxing one time is the land. You know, someone may have a contractual right to play softball on the land. That contractual right wouldn't be a separate piece of real estate. So I think it goes too far to say that you can separate these rights, and you have to look at this in the context of 703.21, that last 703.21 sub 1, the last sentence of which says that you don't separate these units from the land. You don't separate these things out.
The assessor's manual, which is quoted, says you look at the whole bundle of rights, which includes selling. That's the fight, then. Thank you, counsel. Any other questions? Thank you. Ms. Trupke?
May it please the court. I would like to go back to the statutory definition of unit, because I think that is very important in this case. A declared but unbuilt unit meets the statutory definition of unit because it is part of a condominium and it is intended for any type of independent use. While the definition ends with the phrase, in a building is not required to have a unit. A declared but unbuilt unit is part of a condominium intended for any type of independent use. The statutory definition focuses on intention, not construction. The statutory definition expressly includes a cubicle of air as well as a physically enclosed space. The statute does not require that the cubicle of air be physically enclosed, whether in a building or any other enclosure. This makes sense. This way, there is no uncertainty about when a unit comes into existence. If a building were required before a unit exists, it would unnecessarily raise a difficult question of exactly what point during construction a unit comes into existence. The statutory definition avoids that.
What does, in the statutory definition set forth in sub 15 of 703.02, what does in a building modify? That's the last phrase.
Yes, Your Honor. We believe that in a building modifies the phrase right before that, or parts thereof. However, even if in a building modifies independent use, the answer is still the same, because a unit means part of a condominium intended for any type of independent use in a building. It's the intention. The declared but unbuilt units are intended to be for independent use in a building. The intention is what controls, not the construction. So in a building, it is not required to have a unit. And the town's construction is essentially the same construction given by the Court of Appeals in Aluminum Industries Corporation versus Camelot Trails Condominium Corporation. The Saddle Ridge has mentioned the definition of property in section 703.02, subsection 14. However, this definition of property is not what controls for purposes of property tax assessment. It is very clear that what is a unit is what controls for assessment purposes. And that's made clear in 703.21, that every unit and its percentage interest in the common elements shall be deemed to be a parcel and subject to separate assessment. 703.21 also says that the property is not separate from the unit. The assessor looks at what constitutes a unit in determining what to assess. The declared but unbuilt units meet the statutory definition of unit. Now, if the declared but unbuilt units meet the statutory definition of unit, there is no dispute that they were properly assessed to Saddle Ridge. I'd like to go back to the Chief Justice's question about the denominator. And we feel the statutes indicate that the denominator, 1 divided by the number, is the total number of units declared, both built and unbuilt. This is consistent with all the other provisions in the statute that say that that number is a permanent in nature. The condo laws allow for that number to be changed, but only in purposes of expansion or condemnation. That number is not subject to change by construction.
Now, this was changed. As I understand it, the condos were later expanded.
Yes, they were, Your
Honor. To include over 100 units.
Yes.
I was referring to one over 48.
Yes, Your Honor. They were eventually expanded to include the expandable area.
So the declaration had to be revised then.
Yes, and that was not made part of a record. The revised...
it is not part of the record, but it would have been revised, so it would be one out of one over either 148 or 149, depending on the count of the common elements. Can you just add the 100 units in a condo without getting permission from all the condo owners?
Well, the condominium exists. And that's what's platted. When you expand into another area that's not already platted. So you don't need the unit owners in this condominium. This is a separate expandable area.
Separate unit?
Yes, separate.
So why do you add it to so that the shares are now 1 over 149?
Because then they're part of the same condominium in total, but it doesn't affect the unit owners here because that's already been planted.
Well, then why would you update the percentage share? Would you necessarily?
You would update the percentage share to include when it's expanded. That, but the common elements here, that's the same. So if you have 97 acres as a common element here, that's not going to change. It'll be added on to this area. But you can't build on, there is going to be no other separate units in this 100 acres.
The original 100.
The original, right. The original 100 acres.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions? That concludes this condominium case. We have another case that's pending relating to condos. Court doesn't get too many condo cases, but apparently a few. I want to thank both counsel for an excellent argument and for excellent briefs in this tough issue. And that concludes the hearing on 07AP2886, the Saddle Ridge Corporation versus Board of Review for Town of Pacific. That concludes the hearing. We'll take a short recess. So the students and others who wish to leave may do so. And we have other students coming in for the second case.